Thanks very much for tuning in on this Tuesday afternoon. John Najarian is on a phone line with us. You see John on CNBC, also the co-founder of Najarian Family Offices. And he joins us most Tuesdays to talk about what's going on Wall Street. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, you know, what do they say? Be careful what you wish for, Stephen.
What's going on?
Maybe a little more volatility and a little strangeness in the markets. We certainly had that in spades today.
Well, you know, usually when the market has a big move at about 11 o'clock, I blame you guys on the Squawk Box or on CNBC. But this time it was apparently Donald Trump Jr., right?
Yeah, it was those emails that, you know, the story more or less broke yesterday, or maybe it was the evening before, Stephen, but this was just more of the same as far as people seeing that he was willing, at least according to what we've now read, meet with this Russian who it wasn't just for talking about adoptions and orphanages. It was about dirt on Hillary Clinton, which, by the way, I think we'd both agree there are probably both there are two sides to that. I think both sides would be more than happy to get dirt on the other during any election, including our own coming up here in Illinois.
Yeah, the trouble with this one was that, you know, in the emails it actually said Russian government, but and you know that'll be parsed out throughout the day, I guess, in weeks and months and years. But tell me about the reaction, and I don't know if you were on the halftime report today, but the you know how it dropped so quickly and then recovered so quickly. What explain that for me?
Sure. Well, just as you're saying, we saw just a dramatic drop in the market. For the listeners at home, we were up about 0.25% for the Dow Jones Industrials, and then when that news broke, right around call it 10 o'clock or so. Just after 10 this morning, Central Time, the market fell from being up that 0.25% to being down a full 0.5%. So because the numbers are so big these days, with the Dow Jones up over 20,000 and the S&P 500 up over 2,400, the numbers do look very large when you see them. Mm-hmm. But when you put them in those kind of percentage terms, Stephen, it's not as big. But we did, just like Stephen said, folks, V-shaped bottom. We slammed down. A very harsh sell-off of about 140 points for the Dow, and then came right back to unchanged within the next 20 minutes. Basically, the algorithms, there are news-reading algorithms, which, of course, are not human-based. They're trading systems that, when they see certain headlines that they determine are good or bad, and a human being programmed that, but then the computer just reacts, and the computers were aggressively selling for about 9.5 minutes, and then as soon as they stopped and the other computers started sniffing around and saying, what's going on? Is this something we should stick with, the short position, I mean, or should we cover? The computers elected to start covering because that's what they were built to do. And then as they started to leapfrog each other to try to cover faster and faster, they drove the market all the way back up to unchanged. And so at mid-session, more or less, that's where we are now. Instead of being down 140 points, we're down 10 points, and the S&P 500 is only down 5. The NASDAQ made it all the way back into positive territory just now.
So I don't want to diminish the human input here, because the humans created the algorithm, but you're saying essentially this was machine-driven.
Yep, it's a machine reading. In fact, they charge you, if normal news feeds are about $50 a month, most of these news reading algorithm feeds are in the nature of $10,000 to $15,000 a month.
Wow.
So it's a lot of money to get just those headlines extremely fast. Most of those algorithms, I mean, you can see it from the chart, Stephen, when you pull it up, how fast they reacted to that headline.
That's interesting, then.
With Donald Trump Jr.
So they're paying big, big money for those, and you probably could argue that they didn't react appropriately today.
Right. Well, but on the other hand, again, these algorithms, it's more or less, it's just pushing against something that you can't see. So, for instance, if you reached into a box and you started pushing and there was no pushback and you could just keep pushing, 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 and then all of a sudden there's a pushback, that's when it turns around and goes the other way. So the algorithm doesn't really care. It's just built to do what it does very, very quickly. So in my mind, they probably made a bunch of money on that drop. And then they covered, and then started to buy it back. Now, who panicked along with those algorithms? Sadly, a bunch of regular Joes and Janes investors probably saw that happening and said, oh, I'm getting out of this. I'm selling my Apple, or I'm selling my Amazon or Best Buy or whatever it might have been. And they basically, those algorithms are hitting the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. Those stocks that I just spoke of are big components of both of those. So they end up being sold off with the ETF or with the exchange traded fund.
I want to talk a little bit about Amazon. It's Prime Day, and it just seems as if it's pure genius, evil genius. Now, maybe not economic genius. I don't know. But the Amazon Echo, from what I read not too long ago, was the leading item being sold on Amazon Prime Day. Now, according to NPD Checkout Tracker, about 30% of people who buy an Echo Dot buy another one within a year. So think of it as a gateway drug, if you will. And then half of all dollars that Echo owners spend online, they spend through Amazon. So here Amazon has created this great sort of fire sale of their devices, and then they've got a hold on us for the rest of our online purchasing. It's brilliant.
It is absolutely brilliant. And this is the case of Jeff Bezos figuring or taking something somebody else did, much like being a retailer, whether it was books and then clothing and the rest, going into Whole Foods now. But basically, Jack Ma over at Alibaba created something called Singles Day. And that didn't exist before, but he created it. And all of a sudden in China, it became much bigger than Thanksgiving is as far as Black Friday.
Yeah.
And you remember how we always talk about that. It's bigger than Black Friday. And it was created out of whole cloth by Jack Ma. So then you've got Bezos basically saying, you know, I can do that one better. I'm going to put out a Prime Day. I'm going to have a bunch of sales on things people want, including, just as Stephen has accurately said, folks, this gateway drug to the rest of Amazon, which is the Echo, which you can play music through. You can order things from Amazon and so forth, stream things through there, as well as those dots, those smaller ones that you can put around your house as well. So brilliant move by Jeff Bezos. That's why he's the richest man in the world now.
Yep, and that's one of the many reasons why I'm not. Hey, I'm just about out of time, but real quick, do you have a recommendation for us today?
Sure. We're buying a lot of Costco, finally, after a fairly vicious sell-off. Costco is now getting some love again, and buying a good stock when it's hit is one of the things we like to do. I'm not saying it went down 25% or anything, but it did get hit over the past 10 days, and I think now is a nice time to get back in. So we bought COST today.
John and Jerry, great to talk to you. I love when we can talk together.
Love it, Stephen. Thank you for your insight.
Andrew Herman is here, senior editor at DNA Info. And in DNA Info, you should check it out. They've got a section where they call openings and closings, new mm-hmm. businesses, and hopefully more openings than closings.
Yeah.
I know that's your goal.
That's right.
That's just about everyone's goal, in fact.
Yep.
Hey, you got a piece on the Pedway.
Mm-hmm.
and there's a group that wants to make the Pedway. Well, it's kind of exciting if they can turn it into maybe I guess they're looking at maybe an artsy sort of thing. Or more
right.
of a there are a lot of shops down there now.
So I said on Twitter before I came over here, I don't really want to talk about this because I use the
Pedway.
And
right.
I don't really want people to use the Pedway because I don't want to share it.
So you go back to the days, remember when it used to smell like sulfur between like State and Dearborn? And
yeah.
there was the Stevie Wonder singer.
Oh, yeah. So this is an underground tunnel, basically, from about Michigan Avenue to City Hall. And more people know about it now, but not enough people know about it.
And well, it goes under Block 37,
mm-hmm.
and there are past Macy's under there.
Yeah.
Which I just realized maybe 3 weeks ago that the bar Fielder's Choice
yes.
was a baseball bar, but it was Marshall Fields.
Yeah.
Really, I walked by there for years and didn't
right.
get that.
And as you said, it used to be dark and smelly
smells
kind of scary. And they've been improving it over the years. And it's, as you say, it goes under Block 37 now, and there's a lot of nice shops in there.
But they want to make it nicer.
Right, right. And so the Environmental Law and Policy Center came up with some ideas this week, and there's some pictures of what they want to do on the DNA Info website, but basically add more light, more stores, better signage, which it really does need because if you don't know where you're going, it's very
true.
Easy to get lost in there. So don't try it at home. Okay, so stay out of my pedway. but an art gallery, a library under Daly Center. So
he's
they got a lot of good
nice
ideas.
Guy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but I wish them well, you know, but really I just want to walk through it. I don't want to I'm not going to shop through it because if I'm there, I'm hustling from one spot to another, so I'm not sure what the need is.
There's a shoe repair place down there that I get my shoes fixed at sometimes, and it's some of these businesses down there that you'd like to drop stuff off.
I gotcha. Okay.
That would, to me, would work. I don't quite understand the people who go to bars under the air, but maybe because it's fun or different or interesting or whatever. But
it's not any of those things, really.
Well, in the wintertime, it's great because you can use it to get across the loop without getting snowed on. In the summertime, it's better because you don't have to cross blocks.
All right, let's go up above, and cooler sometimes, too. Mm-hmm. Let's go above ground to Humboldt Park, and there's this guy who's opened up a bar, restaurant catering to teachers. I'm not sure I get this.
Right, so this is the Chicago Teachers Lounge and Eatery opening at 2525 West Division, and it has a regular food with a Latin flair, American food with a Latin flair, they say, but it's decorated with teacher-themed stuff like student art, and there's like some books in there and blackboards and some mail slots from those old teacher's lounges.
Right, right.
But it's what I think
mimeograph is interesting. Mimeograph machine, do they have a mimeograph?
Yeah, right, the purple smell.
Right.
But what's interesting about it is it's going to open near what they're trying to build out of the old von Humboldt School, which is a teacher's village. And so they're redeveloping this old school into 87 apartments and 5 townhouses, and they market it towards teachers.
You know,
they want teachers to live there.
Do you understand how they would do that or what that's about?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that the same developer has one in Newark, New Jersey, and it's quite successful. Now, the one in New Jersey, you have the teachers living on site, and you also have charter schools. I haven't seen anything about a charter school in the Chicago area, but it works in a couple ways. It gives people who are Chicago public school teachers a place to live, which everybody needs that at a reasonable rate, and it takes one of these old schools and puts it back into use.
Well, let's hope it works. The name of the restaurant is going to be the Chicago Teachers Lounge and Eatery.
Right.
Andrew Herman, dnainfo.com/Chicago.
Thanks
for coming by.
All right.
It's time to say bonjour.
Bonjour.
Suzanne Muchin is here. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff, and she came back a little French.
So French.
After her trip to Paris. I saw some of the pictures on Facebook, I guess, and you looked absolutely overwhelmed.
Well, I'm always lost.
Yeah.
Which
you look like Mary Tyler Moore in the Twin Cities.
I'm lost. When they say Chicago's a grid, that's just a big lie. That's just, to me,
well, no,
makes
Chicago
no
is a grid.
Okay, it's not. There's streets like Clyburn.
Yeah, there are 3 streets that aren't on the grid.
Don't challenge me here. So when you're in France, they say, well, it's the river. Just like here, it's the lake. That helps me not.
Right. Well, I enjoyed seeing the pictures of you looking up in the sky and trying to read the stars at noontime. You didn't see much sun, though.
No, rain the whole time.
That's okay. It's a beautiful city anyway. So I don't know. Did you run into, President Trump is going to be there, I think, next week, right?
Yes.
He's going for Bastille Day, which is an interesting turnaround because he's just back from the G20 at Hamburg, and which it seems to have not gone very well for the U.S. I mean, I guess there are different people with different views, but clearly Europe as a whole is in a different place than the U.S. is right now.
And made that very clear.
Europe,
right?
Did,
they were
with
very public about that,
yeah.
Right?
I guess I shouldn't say Europe, the industrialized countries.
Correct.
China and all of them. But so we talk here in this segment about gender issues and things like that. And for a brief time, Ivanka Trump was in the seat.
Yes.
Around the table with all the world leaders when President Trump, I think, was meeting with Shinzo Abe from Japan, and came under great ridicule that she was sitting there.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think 2 things came into play. One is the photo itself, sort of like the photo of Kellyanne Conway with her feet up. A photo's always damaging, right? It's hard for any photo to look. It was easy to look at that picture and say one of these things is not like the others.
Yes.
These are all elected leaders, and here is the daughter taking seat for daddy. That's one way to look at it. Now, in a move that is not like me on the show, I will actually, for a moment, go on the Trump defense, which is to say, look, had Chelsea Clinton done this, which is, by the way, what he tweeted, you know, had Chelsea done this, there wouldn't have been an uproar. I actually agree with him.
Do you?
I think if Hillary had taken Chelsea there, and Chelsea, who we all perceive to have a degree in international relations,
well, we don't perceive it.
Okay,
she does.
She has a doctorate. It's not air quotes.
Yeah, right.
She actually does.
A PhD, I think.
And she, yes, and she portrays herself in a more intellectual way and has a little bit more creds. I don't think there would have been an uproar. I don't think people would have made it into a meme. I'm not saying it was comfortable, and I think the real problem here that we have to acknowledge is Trump has created the aura of nepotism, where he's got his family rather than elected, earned officials advising him. That played into it. That was the problem.
Yeah, that's an interesting way that you put it. Instead of earned into it, like he was giving them plum jobs,
yes,
right?
And that's like,
I don't see them
on the head with a little wand.
Funny, I don't see it as him rewarding them with plum jobs. I see him as sort of insulating. It's a different sort of nepotism.
Right. Well, the motivation for it, who knows? But the insulation, it might be that, but the public perception is that he has his family members around him who are in positions that they didn't necessarily earn, and this played into that.
I would have been super outraged at Chelsea Clinton.
You would have?
Absolutely. Are we assuming Chelsea Clinton is part of the government too? Like,
Let's say she had an office in the West Wing.
Yeah, I think it's bad form. I think it sends terrible signals. I think, you know, you should put a man in there.
Exactly. Put a man who's earned it, who has a degree in international relations, not a quote-unquote degree.
I think you should have put someone with a little bit more of a portfolio. She doesn't really have an international, not reputation, not knowledge, but the government job she's holding.
Right.
You know, it should have been Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, someone. It was a bad.
I agree.
But I just showed
about the outrage. I think it went.
You don't think that the, and this is, and you might be right in this case, because I was going to say, you don't think that the right wing would have been up in arms had Chelsea Clinton been there. But it shouldn't be a question of the left wing or the right wing, and I don't think it is.
I think it's the environment that's been created. And, you know, this leads into the issues that are taking place right now in Silicon Valley and on Fox with these men, you know, now losing their jobs as a result of sexual harassment allegations. I think we're in a cultural context right now that is, first of all, for the first time, there's a lot of transparency around issues that had been hidden that are now in plain view. I think Trump is, you know, his whole comments about Morning Joe, he's playing into it. So to some extent, these issues and the backlash, whether it's Ivanka, whether it's Charles Payne at Fox, are the result of an environment that's been unleashed.
Philip Weiss is a guest often here from Seyfarth Shaw at Work, a law firm. They advise businesses about issues like this. And he's coming in tomorrow. And I think what we're going to talk about is just this.
Yes.
That there are now some companies instituting policies to keep the gender separate.
Well,
I don't want to speak for him because that might not be it.
Fascinating conversation.
But, but just sort of negotiating all of this in these times.
Well, it's, you know, when people have talked about the fact that Vice President Mike Pence doesn't meet alone with women.
That's
right now. Where are we going with that?
I'm very uncomfortable with that, too.
Exactly. Right. Where are we? Where does that lead us?
Because that's a religious thing. Right.
I think it stems from that for sure.
Right.
Yes.
So that's we haven't talked about that.
No, but it's all part of creating. I think the meta story here is we're in a very unusual moment in terms of the culture under Trump that's been created, and we're seeing it play out.
I just want to know who's going to be Barbie.
Don't you? Aren't you up at night wondering who's going to play her?
Isn't this the one? Who was going to be Barbie at first?
Well, what I actually want to back up and just say, I didn't actually know, and I think not everybody knew until there was this New York Times article this Sunday about producer Amy Pascal, who had been, remember what all the emails were?
Wasn't
released?
Amy Schumer going to be Barbie?
Really?
Yeah. Amy Schumer was going to play.
We can Google that. We're looking at Bennett.
Bennett is.
Googling that.
I swear to God, she was, and she came under fire
for her.
Yeah, she was.
Okay, and good for her.
And
I honestly, there's a lot to be said. I think we need to go to the highest level part of the conversation first, which is, can you create a Barbie movie that's empowering to women? Do you think that's possible? Would men be empowered by a Ken movie?
I don't know. Does every movie have to be empowering? Can't you just create a movie?
I think that's the purpose. They're actually
saying... Oh, that's what they want to do. Okay.
Amy Pascal, who's the producer of the In the Making film, says that she wants to do this in a tone that's similar to Splash, to Enchanted, and to Big, where the plot involves sort of a woman, you know, being kicked out for not being perfect, and then she comes back with a vengeance. I think that's supposed to be empowering.
That's like that 60s movie, the woman who gets picked on in college, and then she's in a terrible car crash.
Exactly, right.
You know the movie?
Yes, yes.
And she comes back after plastic surgery and kills everyone?
Maybe it's going to be that kind of movie, Steve. Maybe exactly.
Well,
so I don't know. Can you empower women through a character that has stood for such a long time as being something anything but
Here's what I think
empowering.
We can agree on. It's unfair and usually incorrect to prejudge a work of creativity.
We can agree on that.
Okay.
Yes, except I have one exception to that.
Okay.
There was in the one, I know that it's in the museums here too. You go into a museum, like into the Orsay or somewhere in France, and you have real works of art. And then you go and you see that blank white canvas.
Oh, I could stare at that forever.
Stop it. You cannot.
The way the white in one corner matches the white in the other.
You're lying.
Okay, really, I do think let's let them make their movie.
Let them make their movie,
and then after they make their movie, I won't go see it, and I'll have a very strong opinion about it.
As you did with Wonder Woman, I will just say that they're talking
right.
Jennifer Lawrence. You weren't Brie Larson, Anne Hathaway, Emma Stone.
Because she said an Oscar winner.
Yes, an Oscar winner.
Dustin Hoffman
could be. Who knows?
He's done. He's played women before.
Yeah. Yes, he has. Steve?
Tootsie. You don't think?
I don't know. I'm really thinking that they're going here for somebody with breasts, like actual breasts.
Okay. Well, we'll have to wait
we'll
to find out.
We'll have to end on that, won't we?
I'm afraid we do. Suzanne Muchen, listen to her podcast, The Big Payoff, at WGNradio.com, iTunes, and just about everywhere.
Anywhere you want to listen to
it
the podcast.
It plays at Michigan and Monroe, too. So if you stand on the corner, you can hear it sometimes.
Seriously?
No, not really.
Oh.
John Williams just around the corner, but right now, sitting next to me in the Allstate Showcase studio, Kelly Leonard from Second City, years and years, and the host of this podcast, Getting to Yes And.
Yeah.
And he comes by every once in a while and talk, what's going on? What's going on?
I got a couple of cool guys on the show today.
I think you do. Tell me about this.
So Jim Jacoby and Scott Miller are two very successful entrepreneurs who each have a tragedy. Jim is in a horrific motorcycle accident. Scott gets cancer. They don't know each other. But in their recovery, they meet each other.
How long ago did this happen?
This happened like 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, so it's new.
Fairly new. And so they are both looking at writing books about their experience. They're digging in their experience. They meet each other. And they decide together to kind of team up and form a new company. And it's called the American Design and Master Craft Initiative. So out of this tragedy, these guys decide that they need to no longer just be going after the money. They need to do things with deep purpose. So,
all right. So what were they doing before this?
So like marketing, design, you know, building
and
companies.
They've had this great life-changing event and they now say, we're going to focus on, we're going to do something of matter. We're going to do something that matters.
Yeah. And increasingly we live in a world, right, that is like mass produced, you know, and what they have recognized and other people have mentioned as well is we've lost the art of craft.
Right.
So their first project.
Wait, so when we talk about this, we talk about something that matters. I'm thinking orphanages or soup kitchens maybe.
No.
This is a motorcycle.
Yeah. They build an incredible motorcycle. They hire a guy, JT Nesbitt in New Orleans, kind of a crazy but brilliant guy.
Right.
And they want to design the best motorcycle in the world. So they do. And this thing called the Bienville Legacy, there's only going to be 13 of them. And they cost $350,000 a piece.
I'm sorry, I thought you said $350,000 a piece.
I said that.
Right. And what are they, what's out of, what is it, what are they getting out of this?
So what they're getting out of it is they feel like if you look at the future, right, a lot of these jobs that we have are not going to be around. They're going to be automated. The one thing that's left is going to be highly human things. And one of the highly human things is this idea of craft,
right,
building
right.
something that no one else can do. And masters, you know, how can they support people who are really, really good at one thing to focus on that?
And it's an interesting point. You know, we started the show talking to John Najarian from CNBC, and you and I were talking off the air about the big story of the day, the Donald Trump Jr. emails. So he released his emails, and the Dow dropped over 100 points. It might have been 140 at one point.
Wow.
Almost instantly.
Right.
Within a half an hour, it had recovered. And so I'm talking to John, like, what's this about? You know, how can this, you know? And he said a lot of it was machine driven, that there are algorithms to look at headlines and they react that way. So there's, you know, and John would argue still human skills very much needed on Wall Street.
Sure.
But there's a case where a machine has sort of taken over.
Right. And that's not going to stop. Right. I was in a self-driving car recently and the woman behind the wheel said, oh, by the way, we're told not to touch the wheel. Like it's our instinct to do it, but it drives better than we do.
Right. And so these guys are saying, okay, maybe we're going to go back to, it seems as if, okay, we're going to go back to craft. That's one thing. But there's also something sort of meditative about it from what I see from a distance.
No. This idea is around a thing called deep work. And a few months back on the podcast, we had a guy on by the name of Cal Newport. And he's a professor who espouses on the idea that we need to refocus on deep work. We've got to put our digital devices away.
Right.
We have to focus in on one task at a time. All the research says multitasking doesn't work. And yet, what are we asked to do at work?
Right.
Multitask.
Well, what do we ask to do? Not even asked. I beg to multitask.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm answering texts. I'm texting my kids during the show. I'm doing all kinds of things.
Yeah, which means you can only focus so much, and our brains are really not as powerful as we think they are.
You know, and I see that over and over. It's clear. Mm-hmm. The podcast is called Getting to Yes And. And how often do you put? Every week?
Every Tuesday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. At WGN Radio, WGNplus.com, and all over the place. Thanks for coming by. We'll talk in a couple weeks.
Thanks.